The Fan on Demand. Go to fan590.com and sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. This is Hockey Central at Noon on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590, Rogers Sportsnet, and Sirius Channel 97.
Everybody in their positions. It's Hockey Central, Fan 590, and Rogers Sportsnet. Darren Millard, Mike Brophy, and in studio for his yearly appearance. once a year, right?
Usually, well, once a year or twice a year. Once a year. This is a day off for me, and I'm coming
from
in to
TV.
Do the award-winning noon hockey, whatever
the most listened-to hockey presentation in Canada.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Sports talk presentation. Hockey sports talk.
How about the afternoon drive on the station in Vancouver?
That's not all hockey.
Oh, sorry.
There are other shows that people listen to, but not just pure
not
hockey.
Not just hockey. I get you. And it's not, my eyes are watering. It's the Ontario allergy thing.
I thought we had a
I'm not trying to be a star
a
or anything. It's just the Ontario allergy thing.
John Garrett wearing his...
Panama Jacks or whatever they're called. These aren't just knockoffs. These are Panama Jacks or something.
Chips.
Yeah. Yes. Thanks. It goes with like dipped hair.
Paunch.
Yes.
Your paunch.
Now,
there's a whole segment of the population that has no idea what that is. The old, 80s TV show?
Yeah.
Chips. Yes.
So we have two games tonight, Pittsburgh-Montreal, San Jose-Detroit. We'll touch on all four series as Chicago draws even with Vancouver last night and Boston takes a 2-0 lead against Philadelphia. But no better place to start than the jumping atmosphere in downtown Montreal right now as the Canadiens have home ice advantage against Pittsburgh. Don't know anything about Markov yet. Spacek doesn't sound like he's going to be back in this one. Sidney Crosby had a very rough game in Game 2. This one's set up to be a victory for Montreal, but it's also sort of positioned that Sydney will break out again.
Yeah, I mean, to have no shots over the final 40 minutes of the last game, I'd be afraid if I were Montreal. Sydney does not take that well. We saw his frustration breaking a stick against the net.
Whining.
It just pure
Some
frustration.
Some people call it frustration.
I suspect
I call it
with a day off, the energy will build, and this guy's going to come out blazing tonight.
Well, I like the comments of guys like Thomas Plekanec, and okay, your goalie was the big story, but Mike Camilleri is one of the most confident guys you ever want to meet, and Plekanec was talking about sang-froid, which is coolness under pressure, and the guys who have the Stanley Cup rings that they brought in this summer, and Gomez and Gionta and even Hal Gill, and you say, well, okay, Pittsburgh won last year, and they've got all those guys, but Montreal's never had that before. Recently, hasn't had that presence of a Stanley Cup, and you lose a game and it doesn't matter so much. And Gomez and Gionta bring that, and then you get the swagger of Mike Camilleri that he's one of those guys that has that. No matter if you play a bad game, he's still got that. He is one of the most confident players that I've ever been around, and he's playing like a star.
Is it confidence or just really easy going?
Camilleri?
Yeah.
Oh, confidence. You talk to him and...
And you know what the other thing is, too?
I love talking to him. He's
This guy is motivated, too. Let's be honest. Look what happened in Calgary last year. When they brought Ole Jokinen in, it was like, Camilleri, get to the back of the bus and we'll call you if we need you. And he didn't. I didn't think they used him in the same role. It was all about Ole Jokinen. Heaven knows why. And now he's in the playoffs with the Montreal Canadiens. He's a marquee guy. I think he's motivated to show Daryl Sutter and the Calgary Flames that, hey, here's what you could have had. If you just used me.
Well, and how many English-speaking guys as a UFA go to Montreal? And to me, that's one of those, I'm that good, and I want to play in a market, a hockey market, and other than Toronto, the best hockey market in the NHL.
It's funny, they got
Vancouver
three,
very close.
They got all the English-speaking guys this year as UFAs, and three of them were Americans? Gionta, Gomez, and Gill.
Flying Frenchmen.
Yeah.
Led by Jaro Halak in net.
In the Hockey Central studio, Darren Millard, John Garrett, special guest, and Mike Brophy with his regular appearance. Mike Camilleri is a guy that left Calgary, had a few offers on the table, ends up signing with Montreal. Calgary misses the playoffs, and Montreal is in the second round.
And Olli Jokinen gets shipped out at the deadline. And so it is one of those that...
Did you think it was the wrong decision at the time to let Camilleri go?
When they kept Jokinen, yes. I thought that, well, they had to. I don't think there was a question. Once they kept Jokinen, getting Jokinen at the time, I thought, well, okay, here's a big, strong centerman that they need. But he just didn't pan out. Didn't pan out there. Didn't pan out in New York. And you really wonder about his worth.
KHL.
Yes.
And by the way, we're getting word that John has just announced that Jaromír Jágr is going to play in the KHL next year. Nice break there.
Yes, yes. He's the highest paid goon in that league. He starts those line brawls.
$7 million a year last season with Omsk, Avangard Omsk, and he says he's taking a little bit of a haircut, Jaromír Jágr. And this is a bit of a kick to the Edmonton Oilers because, you know, Edmonton media has been all over this thing for a while that Jaromír Jágr is going to end up in Edmonton.
This could fit under one of those. They say sometimes the best trades or best acquisitions are
the ones
that
you
didn't.
Don't get.
Yeah,
yes.
This might fall into that category.
I thought he was good at the Olympics.
I thought he was good, too. But
until he got crunched.
I don't know that Jaromír Jágr, I mean, at the end of the day, you're a team that's starting to rebuild. It's got to be about winning. And I'm not sure that he's about winning anymore. I think he's about the cash grab. People questioned his motivation when he was in his prime. And, I mean, now he's so far past it.
Well, and he got to the point where he wanted to coach and be the GM. And I think there's a lot of players, when they get to a certain age, that they feel that they've been around the game long enough, they've been successful, and they know more than everybody else. And it really becomes a coach killer sort of mentality that, okay, here's what we're going to do in the organization, here's what we should do. And it ends up that, as you said, especially a young team like the Oilers, that now they look like they're starting from scratch and away they go, and they've got some potential.
And this is a guy that used to just pile up the goals and only scored 22 last year in just over 50 games in the KHL. I would have thought he would have had more. He wasn't even a point-per-game player in the KHL last year.
Motivation again.
Yeah, he's 39 years old, too. But again, when you looked at his skill set in Vancouver... I thought he was still okay.
Great shot. Still
at that.
Man, could shoot.
Not that upper echelon, but he could certainly help the Edmonton Oilers.
I just think as a program that's moving forward, you want your young guys to get the valuable ice. And who's going to pay the price if he comes in and takes 18, 19 minutes a game? Whose ice time is he taking? And for the Edmonton Oilers, who want to be successful a couple of years down the road.
No, they want to be successful now.
Well, they got to make the playoffs. I guess if that's what you call success, they want to make the playoffs. I wouldn't want him taking away the ice time of a young player.
No, me either. And there'd be very few teams that I think he'd be a valuable asset. I know you say, well, okay, he looked great in the Olympics and all that. But you think, okay, he's got to go to a high-end team. But could he go to a high-end team and be just
that
mix in be a second, third-line guy, play on the power play, and be happy with that role? I don't think so.
I'm sorry, I'm having trouble conversing with you right now.
Yeah.
With those shades.
Well, okay, I'll take them off. But when they start drooling, when my eyes start drooling because of all the stuff here in Ontario floating around.
Millard, Garrett, and Brophy in the Hockey Central studio for the next hour. Doug McLean will come up at the top of the clock. Murray Wilson will also join us. Do you play with
Murray? I played against Murray Wilson when he was in Ottawa 67, and I was a Peterborough Pete. And in the American League, too, Murray was a voyageur, Scotia voyageur.
Very good player.
Skate like the wind.
You know who you remind me of, and you'll get a laugh out of this, but he was a lowercase Frank Mahovlich, the big left winger, come down the wing, had the big shot coming off the boards. I liked him as a player.
Great guy. I like Murray a lot.
I don't know whether you know this, but he's leaving his job in Montreal.
Is he?
He lives in Ottawa. He commutes back and forth, and he and his wife bought a horse farm.
Oh, really?
In Ottawa, so that's what they're going to do.
He was my connection in Montreal. He was one of the few guys.
Is that right?
Hey, he was one of the few guys who would tell it like it was. You'd phone him up and say, Murray, what's going on? And he would give you all the inside stuff on the Montreal Canadiens.
You'll just be getting information on the Phillies now.
That's good news for us because we'll bring him on in the next hour on Hockey Central at noon and tee up the Penguins against the Canadiens. Who's been the better team so far in this set?
Pittsburgh.
But you know what? They were outshot in the opener. They scored six goals, but they
were four power play goals. And when you have
power play,
have a 4-0 lead, you kind of take your foot off the gas. I don't think there's Pittsburgh's been the better team, but more opportunistic Montreal and great goaltending in the one game.
And there, a lot of their chances in game two were just, it was chaos around the net.
Who was the better team in the Montreal-Washington series?
Well, that was Washington lights out. But, you know, I think this one's been a lot closer than the Montreal-Washington series through two games. You disagree with that?
Yes. I disagree with that. I think the goaltender stole another one. And I think he was part of the reason they lost the first one, but they were going to lose that one either way. Pittsburgh had a lot of jump, and the schedule was so against Montreal, they weren't ready to go. And I think that Montreal, I like Montreal. I like three or four players on Montreal. I like their defense. I like the way they're playing without Markov. But they're just not as good. They're not as good as these teams are beating.
Maybe I'm just, it's all relative. Because obviously Pittsburgh threw 39 shots at Montreal in Game 2. But if I was a Habs fan, I'd be more optimistic after Game 2 of this series than I was after Game 2 of the Washington series.
I think, you know, he does bring up a good point because I like the way their defense is playing. It's funny, they allow a lot of shots.
You don't have to say that, bro, just because you work with them all the time.
No,
you
I don't say it very often, to be honest with you, but I like the way Montreal's defense is playing. They block a lot of shots, so they make the goaltender's job a little easier. I was saying the other day, did Halak make one highlight reel save the other day? It was a lot of saves, but it was a...
Yeah, and he was set, and he didn't look nervous at all, and I thought in game one that was the one thing... It was the first time. And a young goaltender, you got by the first round. Nobody expected you to win. Not as much pressure when you're not expected to win. But now you've knocked off the big dog. You knocked off Washington. You knocked off the number one team, the President's Trophy. Now people are actually saying, well, okay, they can do it again. And there's more pressure on the goalie. And I thought game one, he looked like he was wilting a little bit and never got set, overactive feet and all these things, the terms, you know, and... But he, in game two, as you say, he got square and he got set and all the shots were hitting him.
He was absorbing the puck.
And I thought he looked much better in game two.
And I just like the way their D's playing. And you know, now with the addition of PK Subban, I know it's a young man's league now and kids are like Drew Doughty comes up, Tyler Myers, and these guys step in and they look good right away. But for PK Subban to step in the way he stepped in, it's amazing to me. He just looks like a guy who was meant to play in this league to me. He didn't get a lot of ice time in his first game. They upped his ice time in the second game, and he's responded. He looks like a guy who's saying, I'm here.
Well, Hamilton had such a good year.
Yeah.
And I really think that when your American League team and Montreal's got a really good, they set all sorts of records, best goals against, and all that kind of stuff in Hamilton. And it's easy to just, and they won their playoff round, step from playing against Winnipeg in the American League, and then go right 2 days later. And you're still playing, and you're playing at a high level, playing all those minutes in the American League, and you have to, he, obviously, Subban convinced himself, well, I belong. And
it was like a seamless entry to come in. It's like, he's meant to play in this league. He knows it. He's very comfortable on the ice. He's confident, and it shows. He plays like a veteran already.
Yeah, he's big.
Yeah.
One thing I have heard is, why wasn't he up earlier? And to counter that, I would say maybe Montreal handled this one right. Let him get some experience. Let him get some confidence. Didn't throw him into the fire. And there's something to be said about bringing a player along instead of just throwing him in there.
Well, and the guys they had, like, they picked up Bergeron and Josh Georges. His minutes went from, he was playing 14-15 last year to 21 this season during the regular season, and they got used to playing without Markov right from game one. 37 games he missed, and then when he goes down in this series, first game, okay, we never had this guy for half the season anyway, so now you can fill in.
Without Markov, it would have been really easy to have Subban up throughout the year.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny, though, when you look at guys who have played in the American League, and you can use Jason Spezza as an example. He wasn't happy about being played in the American League during the lockout, but at the end of it, he reluctantly said, it did me some good. Corey Perry and Ryan Getzlaff played that half a season in the American League where they became pros. They learned, they weren't juniors anymore. They learned how to become professional, and I think it helped their
Mike Camilleri.
So, and I always defer to the story. Steve Larmer told me that the year that he played in the American League was one of the most important years of his development because he learned to be a pro.
So I played for Ronnie Wilson's dad, Richmond Robins. Rock through the treetops all night long. Rock through. Well, they used to have that one. Okay, you being a goalie, you'd like that. Rock through the treetops all night long. That was our coming out song. I'm dating myself.
Rockin'
Robins.
Is that the North American League?
No, the American League.
Oh.
American League.
America wasn't even established when you guys were bringing up these stories about the American League.
Or as Kinderchuck and I, we're Rockin' Robins together. Jack McElhargy. There you go. Danny Shock.
Thank goodness for Hockey DB. Because the kids listening to the show can actually go and look these guys up.
Larry Wilson, my coach. I like Larry Wilson. And Ronnie used to come and take shots on me. He was a little younger then, obviously. But Larry was one of the nicest guys. And personality.
Ron Wilson?
Ron Wilson's dad.
And so Ron Wilson would come over and take shots on you?
Yeah, he'd come down and practices, you know, those optional practices, and he'd be out taking shots. It wasn't very good.
Was he as quick with a whip then?
No. But his dad was so nice, and that's why, you know, you see Ron and his on-air persona and around the rink, and he has that arrogant sort of air about him, and I know him pretty well because the connection that I have, and he's basically a nice guy when you get to know him, and his dad was so nice, unfortunately passed away very young when he was jogging, had a heart attack, but Larry was one of the nicest coaches I've ever played for. He's just a real gentleman and knew the game very well, and then you see Ron, you say, whoa, what happened?
That's a backhanded slap.
It's kind of a compliment, and maybe not.
So you've got the connections, eh? Murray Wilson sets you up with the Habs. Ron Wilson gives you the inside scoop.
Ron Wilson doesn't give me any inside scoops. But at least when I go into his office, he doesn't treat me like I'm an underling.
We'll talk about San Jose and Detroit as we continue. And also the accusation by Daniel Carcillo that Mark Savard bit his finger. Charlie. We'll continue with that on Hockey Central at noon. Fan 590 and Rogers Sportsnet.
Hockey Central at noon on Toronto Sports Radio. The Fan 590, Rogers Sportsnet, and Sirius Channel 97.
Almost a roundtable today on Hockey Central at noon with Millard, Brophy, and Hockey Central's John Garrett, who's with us for the second round.
Yes.
And then you're back for the championship
series? Back for the finals, yes. Hopefully it'll be two Canadian teams.
Ooh. Well, then we'll be on the road.
Yes. And we will be on the road.
We're so patriotic, we're only going to go on the road if there's two Canadian teams.
How about Canadian team?
Okay, then we'll go on the road.
Okay. And when you come to Vancouver, you stay at my place?
No, you live too far out of the city.
Yes, I do.
I'm staying right downtown again.
Yeah. I'm going to get a room and rent it out like I did during the Olympics to you guys.
To me?
Yes, that's right.
My buddies really appreciated that, by the way.
Oh, I know.
Up at Angus Glen Golf Course. I mean, you are the king. They've never met you, but you were the king.
Didn't have to sleep on the floor?
No.
Yeah.
So tonight's schedule, we get Pittsburgh-Montreal. We'll save the prediction until the end of the show, what you guys expect to happen this evening at the Bell Center. But we also get San Jose against Detroit. It's been 2-1 goal games in this series. Detroit got blitzed in the opening period of game one and then played a good hockey game after that. Game two, they had the lead going to the third period and let it go. So what do we expect to happen tonight? We'll start with you, John.
Well, San Jose has really had a hard time at the Joe. And I think Detroit will come back in this one. But San Jose is playing, and I think Todd McClellan, his Detroit experience, has got them more determined. And I think it's going to come down to goaltending. And Jimmy Howard in games one and two, 8 goals against, blow a lead. He's been okay, but not great. Especially game one, those 3 quick goals by San Jose. And the game winner, the Heatley goal, he lost the net, and the game winner, Pavelski's goal through the legs. I didn't like those. And I think he's going to have to be better, but I think Detroit will win this one. I don't know about game four. I think San Jose is going to win this series.
He did make a couple of great saves in the first couple of minutes of game two when San Jose, again, was all over them and could have had the lead again.
Mm-hmm. When I look at the Red Wings, excuse me, I thought it was Henrik Zetterberg's worst game. I didn't think he had much in that game. He was losing pucks. His passes were bad. You don't see Henrik play as poorly as he played. And the other concern I have of the Red Wings is they're not getting much out of their depth players. Drew Miller, he didn't play very much down the stretch that game. They've got a bunch of guys who skate well, but I don't think they're as effective. And, you know, and we've talked about this year. Michael Samuelson departing the Detroit Red Wings was a very good third-line player for them who could play on the power play, or if they had an injury, he could easily slide up the ladder and play on the second line. And they don't have that same skill level now. And you see what Michael Samuelson's doing for the Vancouver Canucks, and then look what their third-line guys are doing. Nothing.
Well, they were counting on Yuri Hudler staying. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, was Kenny Holland was counting on that. And then when that didn't happen... Samuelson leaving really did leave a big hole, and then Abdelkader comes in, and again another real good American League season. But
Danny Cleary's been a very good playoff player for them the past couple of years, to the point where during the Stanley Cup year there was some talk about him being a Conn Smythe candidate, and now one goal, and he's just not as effective as he's been. He was a guy who went to Team Canada's training camp and wowed everybody last year, obviously because he knew the Babcock system. He had a bit of an advantage, but I'm not seeing the same high-level play and high-level energy out of Dan Cleary that we've seen the past couple of years.
Well, and Todd Bertuzzi. I think they were hoping that Todd Bertuzzi, against a big San Jose team, would be more effective. And it's Holmstrom who is creating all the havoc in front of the net. But I thought, and especially against a guy like Douglas Murray, who is a big, strong defenseman, that Todd Bertuzzi would be able to create some open ice for the other guys just by going to the net, and he hasn't been able to do that.
In fact, he's been a liability.
Yes.
Game two, for sure, was a liability. But it's still 2 one-goal games. So, and San Jose is getting the great production out of Joe Pavelski, but only one goal from Joe Thornton. And
that was a bit of a lucky one, too.
Yeah, but, well, you could say the same thing about Camilleri. Mm-hmm. Right place, right time.
Except for the one that he knocked in.
Picked out of the air.
That was pretty good.
You think that was luck?
Well, good bounce. He kicks it up and bats it out of the air. You don't work on that in practice, bud.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah, but it's still lucky bounce off the foot and then up.
You don't think he kicked it up? Had it in his skates, kicked it up, and then bang it in?
Fortunate, okay? Can we settle on that?
And you're saying that Joe Thornton's was lucky, but they had a 3-on-1.
I didn't say luck. He said luck.
That was I thought it was lucky.
It bounced off Cromwell.
Because of the Lidstrom
stick breaking. But and Heatley and Marlowe, if Marlowe ever gets going, where's Marlowe going to end up?
That's what I mean. Like we're breaking down the Detroit Red Wings here and criticizing them for a lack of supplementary offense.
They're down 0-2.
Without Joe Pavelski, San Jose's screwed.
Yeah.
Joe Pavelski's writing a pretty nice little story for him. I wrote about it in Sportsnet.ca yesterday. Is this the John Drews thing? I mean, he's a better player, and he's, back-to-back 25-goal seasons, so you know this guy knows where the net is. But to be scoring at the rate that he's scoring at right now, I think we're watching something special. And if they go to the Stanley Cup Final...
You don't think Joe Pavelski will be able to do this again next year?
No.
You don't think he'll get 25 or to 30 next year during the season?
Yeah, I don't. He's averaging. He's a goal a game guy. He's not going to score 82 goals in the next regular season.
No, I know.
He's scoring at a pretty high rate.
You don't
now.
Think he could get 10 goals in the playoffs next year?
10, but he's on pace right now to score.
Yeah, but let's be realistic.
He's done so far, if he continues to play at the pace he's at, you're being very cantankerous, aren't you?
Well, John Drews, and I like John Drews.
John Drews is a great guy.
But Joe Pavelski is going to be a
He's a very
great
good hockey player, but he's not a guy who's going to score you a goal a game in the playoffs.
Nobody does.
But he is, though.
But he, yeah. Oh,
okay,
man.
So I said we're watching something special that we may not see him do again.
Sidney Crosby scores a goal a game in the playoffs. He's not even going to do that during the regular season.
Well, he only had last game.
You could compare him to John Drews.
I said
Drews.
A guy
Sidney
like,
Crosby
yeah,
a John
guy like
Drews.
Joe Pavelski has kind of come out of nowhere. And he's wowing us with what he's doing in the playoffs.
Out of nowhere, he was an Olympian.
On Team USA.
Playing instead of Brian Gionta.
Yeah.
And
he's a
silver
good player.
Medalist.
I'm saying he's a good player, but I don't think, I said what we're seeing is something special. Do you think he's going to do this again next year?
Yes.
You think he's going to score a goal?
Oh, not a goal a game, but I mean, he'll get 10. He'll get 10 in the playoffs, and 10 is a good playoff season. Yeah. Nobody's going to get, if you play 20, you play 24 playoff games, how many guys are going to get 24 goals?
If he continues to score like he's scoring, let's say they make the finals, if this guy ends up scoring 18 or 19 goals, 10 years from now, we're going to be talking about the Joe Pavelski year. Next year, if he scores 10 goals in the playoffs, we're not going to say, oh, do you remember that year Joe Pavelski scored 10 goals?
Yeah.
It's not
Yeah, but if he gets 10 next year.
It's a good year.
Mario's best year. What was Mario's best year in the playoffs?
I don't know.
Do you remember that? Because he was consistent every year he was in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And it'll be the same with Pavelski. He might get, as you say, he might have some ridiculous number this year, but he'll get 10 every year. And you'll say, okay, Joe Pavelski is a very good player. But you won't remember that year as like a John Drews year.
But if he scores 18 or 19 goals in this year's playoff, it's going to be one of those things that we remember 10 years
from now. Okay, so what's the difference between, why are you writing about Joe Pavelski being the John Drews and not Camilleri or Samuelson?
I wrote about Camilleri too.
It was,
and Samuelson?
Saying that we,
and
with Samuelson? With these players, we have the potential that we may be seeing something special. Who knows? We'll know by the end of the playoffs.
You overstepped.
Yes, the writer's license.
This is a guy who hands out awards halfway through the first round, and he's telling me I overstepped my bounds. He's handing out the Conn Smythe.
Game three of the season, he says, if the season ended today.
Yeah, there would have 75 goals.
There would be an investigation, though. It would be an illegal season. John Drews is a good buddy of mine.
Yeah, I
but
know
that,
Johnny.
That's an insult to John Drews.
How's that?
Because you have to be in a certain category to be qualify for the John Drews
Award. Yes, you do.
Well, I think if Pavelski scores 18 or 19 goals in this year's playoff, 15, it's a pretty special thing.
How many did John Drews get the year that he got?
14 and 15.
14 and 15.
How many of those were game winners, too? I think a number of them were game winners.
Who cares?
It was just a great year for the Peterborough natives.
Yes.
Detroit gets home ice advantage tonight, and you talked about the problems that San Jose has at the Joe. Now you're getting texts from people
This is about Markov. This is news. He has a torn ACL.
Yeah.
Little news item there.
I was going to tease that, but go ahead. Break it.
It's out.
He's done. Did we expect him to come back?
No.
No. Hard luck injuries, though, eh?
Yes. Yes. That one wasn't that bad. It was a shoulder to shoulder. He saw him coming. Braced himself, and then he gave out.
And the way he went down, we didn't know what it was, but my wife said, we know it's not his arm the way he threw his glove. his arm's okay because he chucked that thing. So no Markov, torn ACL, but back to Detroit and San Jose. I think Detroit wins this game tonight.
I do too.
I picked Detroit.
I don't think they're going to win the series, but I think Detroit will win this game tonight.
I think they can win the series. And I definitely think they win tonight's game, and I do think they can win the series.
I think they'll lose game four.
Really?
And they'll be
get into some of the most idiotic, childish back and forth, one-upmanship. My daddy's bigger than your daddy.
Why?
John Drews had 8 goals during the regular season, 14 in the playoffs.
Yeah. And Joe Pavelski had 25 again, and he's having one of those where everything's going in for him.
So really, if you compare that, Joe Pavelski has to score 50 goals in the playoffs.
And he may do it. Would it be special for you then?
If he gets 50, that'll be
okay.
You have to really double your output during the playoffs from the regular season.
So, more than double. So, he's got to get 53,
actually. So Pavelski's got no real chance on this one. Do you think Detroit, too?
Yeah, I think Detroit will win tonight. I picked them to win the series. I'm not as confident now. I just think that the big line, Joe Thornton's line, are they ever going to play better? Like, if they do pick up their game a little bit, I think it gives them a real decided edge, but it's becoming like, that's a big if now. I don't like the way they're playing. I thought Heatley played okay, though.
Yes.
He was okay. He made a really good play on that 3-on-1, taking the shot. That was the right play to make. That ice looked bad to me.
And use the goalie.
They had a couple Eagles concert. Didn't the ice look terrible? I mean, Detroit, in the first game, their tape-to-tape passes were absolutely like a clinic. And in game two, I don't think they clicked on 3 passes in a row in the entire game.
If Danny Heatley passes to Joe Thornton on an odd man rush, then he should be benched for the entire rest of the playoffs.
That was a pretty good play.
If a shooter passes.
That was like Alex Edler taking Versteeg back on that 2-on-1 last night.
Yeah.
Instead of just turn around. Patrick Sharp's got the puck, and you're going to shadow Versteeg to the corner and give Patrick Sharp the lane to the middle.
You're talking about the shorthanded goal that Chicago scored in the third period to tie it up. And there's a 2-on-1, and the defenseman just peeled off and took the other guy.
Never turned around the entire time.
And gave Sharp the real lane to the goal. I still think Roberto Luongo was caught on the play, flat-footed.
I think he thought that Sharp was going to shoot it.
Yeah. You know what? He thought that Sharp would never have that lane to the other side.
Yes.
Because the defenseman would take it away.
Stay in the middle a little bit. A little bit.
Now, would you have a conversation with your defenseman after that?
Yes.
Yeah. Would it be very one-sided?
No. It would be a discussion. And it would be one-on-one. You wouldn't do it in front of the other guys, but first time that you got him alone, you'd say, well, you know, what were you thinking?
Now,
he would probably have an excuse. He would probably say, well,
He was skating forward as a defenseman coming back.
Yes.
How does that change things than being the defenseman skating back?
If I was defending Alex Edler, I would say that he probably felt that he didn't have time to turn and face Sharp. Because Ehrhoff had the bad pinch and that created the 2-on-1 to start with. In a 2-1 game, when you're on the power play with Duncan Keith in the box, instead of playing it safe, he pinched and created
too,
the 2-1.
Does it enter the equation? Does he think, you know, the way Roberto's playing, he's probably going to make the save? Like, does he have that much confidence in his goaltender?
I hope not. I hope no defenseman is thinking that I'm going to completely just give the whole entire ice away and let the guy go.
The way Vancouver played in the back half of that game, you could make a case for what Bro's talking about because they gave up odd man rushes, breakaways.
Oh, I know.
Versteeg had, it was like a shootout drill on his own.
Well, diving around too. Kevin Bieksa on the game-winning goal left his feet and dove to start with, got back up, got back into the play, and then charged the point and left his feet again and left Versteeg wide open.
So much for my prediction that was going to be a sweep for Vancouver. Somewhat confident in that, too. 2 minutes in last night, I was looking good. I blame the Canucks for that. That's not a bad prediction. That's the bad performance of the team. When we continue, we'll get to the other two series. And it is Vancouver and Chicago with a split, and Boston with a 2-0 lead over the Philadelphia Flyers. We'll explore the Canucks a little bit more, and the Flyers, what do they do going back to home ice with John Garrett, Mike Brophy, Darren Millard on the Fan 590 and Rogers Sportsnet.
Way more than just the score. Sports Insight on Toronto Sports Radio. The Fan 590 at fan590.com. Hockey Central at noon on Toronto Sports Radio. The Fan 590, Rogers Sportsnet, and Sirius Channel 97.
Hockey Central at noon, the Fan 590, and Rogers Sportsnet. Doug McLean coming up at the top of the clock. Murray Wilson will join us, the Habs color voice. Game 3 in Montreal tonight. Plenty of hockey talk there. Vancouver comes up short in their quest to sweep Chicago at the United Center, and now goes back to Vancouver tied up at 1. Darren Millard, along with Mike Brophy and John Garrett in the HC studio. The tying goal was disappointing because it was a shorthanded goal last night by Patrick Sharp, but the winning goal, an odd man rush late in the third period. Take us through how that developed, what happened for Chicago to have that type of opportunity.
Well, it was one of those bad changes. And the Sedins, as well as they play, they have long shifts. And they were at the end of a long shift. Daniel Sedin changed.
They had the puck in the Chicago zone, right?
Puck in the Chicago zone along the right boards. Henrik Sedin's playing on the right side at the time. He's the first man in, so he's got the puck. Throws it around behind the net. Mason Raymond, who is coming off the bench for Daniel Sedin, is on the left side. He's coming in, can't decide whether he's going to pinch in hard on the puck that's going around the boards. Michael Samuelson is going in to forecheck in the corner, end of a long shift. He sees Mason Raymond coming in, and then he doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know whether he should peel back. And Seabrook made a nice play, threw it up the middle to Andrew Ladd, and then they get the odd man rush.
So
because by then, Mason Raymond's in. And Michael Samuelson is halfway in, doesn't know what to do. And these guys are at the end of the long shift, so Samuelson can't come back as hard as he want. And it's a 3-on-2 with Bieksa and Ehrhoff are the defensemen back. So it ends up, Versteeg has the puck. Ladd throws it over to Versteeg on the left side. Versteeg, left-hand shot, going wide on Bieksa. Bieksa goes down. Versteeg very patiently takes a step on the inside. And then all of a sudden, it's in tight. By this time, all the Canucks get back.
Chaos.
They all jam the net, and it goes back to
good
the point.
Shot,
a good play all around by the Blackhawks to take it out of the mayhem and get it back and set up Versteeg, who had some open ice, because the Canucks at this time were, let's just pile in front of the net and hope that it hits us.
And Versteeg was a guy, he should have probably one-timed that shot, but instead stopped it, settled it, and still got
and
it to
roofed
go.
It,
and
yeah.
that's, you know, that's to take go back to what I was saying about Detroit, it's role players not producing. You look at Chicago, and you get some production out of your role players like that at this time of year. That's, to me, is what separates teams in the playoffs. You always take your first line, possibly your second line, and cancel each other out. It's what your third and fourth lines can do in their limited time, or if they're getting a bit more time. To me, that can be the difference in a series. And that's what, to me, Pittsburgh's role guys were very good last year in the final. And I thought that created the separation between the Penguins and the Red Wings.
No, in game one, Kyle Wellwood scores. Yeah. Mason Drayman's got a couple of points. Christian Ehrhoff scores. And the Canucks really hammered them 5-1.
What happened from the first 5 minutes of that game, where Vancouver could have had a 3-0 lead if they get the bounce off the post? Was it Bieksa?
Yeah,
had
Bieksa.
Had a great chance, saved by Niemi, and then off the post. Still up 2-0 to losing the game 4-2.
Don't you think the Blackhawks,
desperation
and to get down like they did, a couple of stupid penalties, Chalmerson over the glass, delay a game, and then Seabrook comes back and not only bumps the net with his shoulder, but then pushed it with his hands, and just two obvious penalties, a 5-on-3 and cash in right away. But then I thought the Hawks picked it up, and the Canucks tried to take it home, but you have two power plays in the third period. You're ahead 2-1 going into the period. You get outshot 14-6, and you give up a shorthanded goal. And to me, that's one of those where, okay, Chicago picked it up, but the Canucks sat back too much instead of continuing on with the forecheck. Joey Kenward, our good friend at Canucks.com, will discuss this afternoon. You know Joey.
Yeah.
From your Western League.
Did Joey tell you what time the...
4 o'clock, I think they are.
4 o'clock.
Canucks.com. I'm sure 4 o'clock Pacific time.
The Canucks sleep doctor.
Oh, don't get me. You always poke me with stuff like this.
Well, they most teams would fly home after a game like last night,
especially when you're going home.
Team. Yeah, the yes. Canucks have the sleep doctor who's so scientific about when to fly out. Do you leave right after the game? Do you stay overnight? They decided to stay overnight in Chicago and fly out today, and they're in the air right now.
Yes. I don't get it. I really don't get it. And they left Thursday. The game's on Saturday. They left Thursday to go to Chicago. And in Vancouver, you travel a lot during the season. It's out. It's on everybody. Okay, you travel a lot. You don't have the bus trips to Buffalo or if you're the Leafs or go to Ottawa or Montreal. Every trip is a flight. Closest place is Calgary, and that's an hour and 15-minute flight. So you travel a lot. Now, the sleep doctor has done these studies where there's quarters, weekly sleep patterns. And for some reason, you stay over, gain 2 hours coming from Chicago. So last night, even with the late start, they would have been in their own beds by 2 o'clock in the morning. And you'd be home sleeping in your own bed. But no, now you waste another complete day flying, and your family, your wife is nagging at you. You've been way too long all year, the Olympics, all this kind of stuff. And now... the sleep doctor's got you away again. You do that. You get me rolling on stuff like that. That I just
after a game. How often were you in your hotel bed by 2 o'clock?
Players. How many players? The sleep doctor says I'm going to go. We'll have a team meal back at the hotel, and I'm going to stay in Chicago when you're wound up after the game anyway.
Yeah. Good luck on that one.
Yeah.
The Leafs need a sleep doctor. Well, they need somebody to wake them up. Not a sleep doctor.
Anti-sleep doctor.
Boston has a 2-0 lead on Philadelphia.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised by this one. I thought that Philadelphia really, in game 82, it's almost like everything came together for them. And they were pretty good in the first round of playoffs, and now they find themselves in a hole. But this, again, is one of those series where you go back to Philadelphia, I could easily see this being tied after four games.
I really think Philadelphia, and when you talk about the one-goal games, how come you don't have the one-goal game thing going here with Philly? Like you did with San Jose and Detroit. You were so adamant about that. Now this is, Boston at home. And
are you surprised by this at all?
No.
No.
They played really well at home. They're a disciplined team.
They're 5-0 in the playoffs at home.
They're a disciplined team. They get Mark Savard back. That just helps.
Yeah.
But I thought Philly, with that long stretch that they had off, I thought that would really help them, because they lose those guys in Carter and Gagne. And now you've got 9 days to work on your plan. But I didn't expect
more than 9 days.
Well, their goaltender has to be be better. Yeah. I mean, Boucher was very good against New Jersey. New Jersey was bad. Mm-hmm. They were a bad team.
It was a real fine line between how bad they were versus how good he was.
The Flyers, though, it really accentuated the lack of skill when you look at their number two power play unit.
I thought Aaron Asham was one of their best players.
I like Aaron Asham. You're mocking him. But Aaron Asham,
for
his 5 minutes.
For his 8 shifts, Aaron Asham was really good.
He had a shift last night where he was good, and I just said, Aaron Asham does a nice job.
Right
and
out of the blue. Just Aaron Asham.
You guys take something, you just pick, poke.
Of all those cookie-cutter guys they have in their third and fourth lines, I would take Aaron Asham ahead of Carcillo, ahead of Poe Pow. I think he's the better player. This guy can actually make plays.
Aaron Asham could be a John Drews. Yeah.
Probably. And every host wants to be an analyst.
Every host wants to be an analyst. And every host wants to be a play-by-play guy.
Play-by-play guy. And then you can be a GM. Mm-hmm. You could do that.
Right.
A lot of
play-by-play host guys want to be a GM.
Yes.
Brof was almost a GM.
Yes.
Or an assistant GM.
Our good friend Dennis Bayak. He was a GM. Yes, he was a GM. Went the other way, though. Mm-hmm. He wasn't the play-by-play guy before he became the GM. He was a GM first, and then...
Now he's just wallowing at that other station.
Yes.
Feel bad for him.
another nice guy. One of the top 33 play-by-play guys I've worked with.
You worked with 33 play-by-play guys?
Yes, I have. 33 different play-by-play guys.
RJ's got to get into that group.
Who's the best?
You can't say a current guy.
I can't say a current guy.
So Shorty, Labardius.
Okay, Cuthbert and Cole and those guys. I can't say those guys.
No. Current guys that you work with. Sorry.
Oh, I can't say current guys. Cuthbert would qualify.
Yep.
Jim Houston would qualify because I don't work with him anymore.
What does McLean call him? Houston.
Houston, yeah.
Jim Houston.
Jim Houston.
A lot?
You know who I really enjoyed working with is Don Whitman, the late Don Whitman. Just a great play-by-play guy, nice guy, grew up on radio. That was the only thing that Whit, and I used to have to tell him because he grew up with no color guy.
Yeah.
He was a radio guy in Winnipeg. Let me talk once in a while, Whit.
Cheech, enjoy your day off, okay?
Thank you. Thank you. It was my pleasure coming in.
Our pleasure. Yes. Doug McLean is coming up on Hockey Central Noon.
Hockey Central on Toronto Sports Radio, the Fan 590 and Sirius Channel 97.
Fan 590 and Rogers Sportsnet in high definition. It's Hockey Central at noon, hour two with Darren Millard and Doug McLean. Unbelievably, I will talk less in this hour than I did the opener. Even though there was one more person in the studio during the first hour with John Garrett and Mike Brophy.
It's my preparation that just went there. I don't need it anymore.
No?
No. Because I found out today I went to the Range Rover dealer to the ship this morning to pick up my truck and had to get there? I took a cab to get there.
Kippy didn't give you a ride?
No. So I get there and I meet the service guy, and he calls me aside. He said he really enjoys the show. But he said, look, I got some stuff for you. I got some really good stuff. And I said, oh, geez, this is great. So I'm an insider. I'm a hockey. I guess I'm considered a hockey insider. And I'm getting my scoops now at the Range Rover dealership on DuPont.
So what did he say? What was his name?
Merlo is coming to Toronto. Oh,
okay.
Nelson's his name.
Nelson. Okay.
Merlo is coming to Toronto.
To play next year or just like for a trip?
No, he's coming to play here next year. Yeah, he's going to come here and it's done. It's pretty well done. He's coming.
And he knows this because he's got a friend of a cousin or...
He wouldn't divulge his sources. So anyway, I thought, gee, I'm going to start going to the Range Rover dealership like once a week and get information. But anyway, just for you Toronto fans out there so you can be excited, Marlowe will be here next year.
Which
I've been told by my other sources that he's going to end up in L.A. But, again, those are my sources versus Nelson's. Believe what you want.
Which we'll dealership was this?
It's the Range Rover. What's it called?
Whereabouts?
It's on DuPont Street, and it's a Range Rover, Jaguar, Bentley, Rolls-Royce dealership.
Oh, I know that one.
Yeah. Oh, it's Grand Touring. Anyway, so that's
right
my
scoop. Johnson Furniture.
That's my scoop for today. Now, what just, so we got, we've got...
See, I told you I talk less during this hour than I did the opener.
Right, but at 4 o'clock, at 4 o'clock on the fan, we have... what's the guy's name? Gene Simmons comes on at 4. And Ron Jeremy just left here with the mustache and the dyed hair. Like, Cheech has got to...
And you consider yourself the ladies' man of this radio station. And you're getting beat out by two dudes.
Yeah, I'm getting beat out by Ron Jeremy, who just left with the mustache and the dyed hair. And highlights. He's got some highlights in it now. And then, of
that's
course,
John Garrett.
And, of course, Gene Simmons of Family Jewels arrives on in at 4.
So. And that's Bob McCown.
I didn't say that. You did.
Bite me.
That family,
that's the nicest thing Bob McCown said to me in a long time. What was that?
Bite me.
That Family Jewels show is one of the best things.
It's priceless.
Yeah. They do a great job on that.
I haven't watched
it. I would. Because you're too busy watching CNBC.
Watching hockey.
I would love to see a reality show on you.
No.
You guys could do it. Between you and Jill.
Yeah.
You could. And Kippy.
Yeah, we could.
And Buckley. The producer over at the Hockey Central. You could definitely do
that
it.
That killed it right there.
You have enough material. You have enough...
stories.
Bitterness.
That's untrue.
And that's what you need. You need bitterness to be... You need to be able to drive people...
insane.
And yeah.
You were
that.
Driving me last night at midnight doing that final hit. And I watched it this morning. I'm thinking, boy, we cover things up well because you were absolutely getting it on my nerves. Anyway, so it was a great night of hockey. I mean, really, Vancouver weren't good last night. I mean, for the first 7-8 minutes.
Outshot them 9-0 or something, whatever.
First 7-8 minutes, they were good, got the 2-0 lead. I thought after that, Chicago played a great game. They battled back. They came back. They dominated. But to give up a shorthanded goal, to give up the game winner on a 3-on-2 with 2 minutes left, 90 seconds left, defense pinching, poor decisions on changes, poor decisions by guys hesitating on situations, defense pinch, then caught in their own zone, collapsing to the net, defensemen leaving their feet, defensemen going to the point. I mean, it was just a Versteeg with great patience. And I think what impressed me most about the game was I think a key to the whole series is Keith and Seabrook. Can they contain the Sedins? If they can contain the Sedins, then they have a chance to beat Vancouver. Last night, I thought Keith and Seabrook were spectacular. They had a couple of assists each. They had a goal. Seabrook scored the first one to get them back in it. They were involved in both the shorthanded and the winning goal on big plays. They controlled the puck a lot of the time the Sedins were on the ice. Taves matched up with Kessler. It looks like they're going to face that all year. They seem to get their game going a little bit. So it was a much better performance. It's still, I was happy Chicago won last night because I want to see a great series. I think this has the makings of great hockey because it's physically demanding hockey. It's skill. It's defense that are active on the Chicago side. You got potential superstars with the Sedins and Taves and Kane. Hossa started to get his game going a little bit. I think it's got the sharp, big-time player. I think it's got the makings of a great series.
And as much as Chicago came on after that first flurry by Vancouver had the two power plays in the third period. Exactly. They had a one-goal lead. They had the odd man rush. Remember, Sallow was the late guy coming, just chugging, shorthanded.
Yeah, they had I'm not sure that was Sallow, was it? He didn't look like he was skating as well as Sallow. It might have been ripping.
It was the end of it. Well, they wouldn't have had...
Anyway. Whoever it was, he skated like I did.
Kill a lot of penalties with three forwards?
His stride was the same as mine coming through the middle of the ice. So.
Well, he was pretty burnt out by the end of that that shit. Vancouver had chances.
Yeah.
And really,
but did
have
they,
nobody to blame but themselves to put that thing away.
After the first 10, did they
No, but
have a
I'm talking about the two power plays in the third period. Yeah, exactly. And then a shorthanded chance.
Yeah, the shorthanded one was a killer, and give Sharp credit for that. And the way that was played, who was it, Ehrhoff that played that, or was it Edler? On the back check.
I think Ehrhoff was -4.
Yeah, they struggled. So it was a fun game.
Ehrhoff and
watch.
Edler were both on the ice. The one pinched and the other one made the bad play on the 2-on-1.
Right. So it was, and watching it with John Garrett was good because you think he's, every time somebody scores against the Canucks, he's on the verge of crying. So, you know, so it really is, It was fun. Fun night.
Email from Judy, a regular listener correspondent. You know Judy. She's in Tim Hortons cards for us every Christmas.
That was very nice.
Nice to see John Garrett bringing in his knowledge.
Does she have any Starbucks cards?
But I nothing's ever good enough, right?
I'm joking.
But I think like you Tim's. Might be the buffer between the two with Doug coming in. The ratings are going to go sky high. Judy. So what? John Garrett bringing his knowledge. I'll be the buffer between John Garrett and Doug McClain. And I was.
And you know what, Judy, just so you know, the ratings are sky high. Like, we're blowing people out of the water, especially in the second hour. It's gone to a whole new level. And I just, you know. Just
you met
so
with the boss yesterday.
It's amazing where they are. So we're thrilled about that. And the second hour has seemed, it seemed to have reached a whole new level.
And Danny, Dan the boss, it's Don. So I was waiting for you to correct me, but you still don't know his name.
I call him Mr. Collins.
Did he really tell you that the second hour is bigger than the first hour?
I can't. I look, I'm just hearing things through the. I know you're not supposed to talk about ratings on the air, but I am. So I'm really proud of the way this second hour has really evolved.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Mr. McClain, now that Markov is out for the playoffs, do you see PK Subban's minutes increase and see him on special teams, and do you now hope for Montreal to advance since the Markov injury?
Well,
that's from Dominic in Woodbridge.
I'll tell you something. When he first was brought up, I questioned it because they were putting him in Game 6 against the best offensive team in the league. Well, he came in and played 10 minutes, 10:01 his first game. He played 10:50 in Game 7. Give Jacques Martin, Perry Pern, Kirk Muller, who's ever working the defense, credit for the way they put him into the lineup and eased him into the lineup. Then he goes to 19 minutes in game one plus, 19 plus. Then he goes to 23 minutes the other night. He's playing the power play. He's playing 5-on-5. He's not playing against Crosby, limited amount of time. But you know what? To me, he's been one of the great stories of the playoffs. I mean, who would believe we'd be talking about this kid who's, hey, we all knew he was a good prospect, and we said that last week that he's a heck of a prospect. Leading scorer for the Hamilton Bulldogs in the playoffs. Third leading scorer in the regular season, all rookie team, I believe, in the American Hockey League. He's been a great story. And with Spachik and Markov out and Bergeron, who you can't play against top people, this has been a great story.
Well, Chad,
they're lucky to have him.
A lot more on the Montreal Canadiens and Game 3 against the Pittsburgh Penguins with Murray Wilson coming up in the next segment. Also have Darren McCarty a little bit later. The Detroit Red Wings down a deuce against the San Jose Sharks as they play Game 3. Another email coming in. Hey, guys, can someone use their connections to have Danny, this is Daniel Carcillo, pulled aside? He desperately needs to have an attitude adjustment. He is supposed to be a professional hockey player, not a three-year-old throwing himself about the ice. Grow up, mustachio. Thanks.
I just got an email. Tell Millard he takes his wedding band off more than Tiger Woods does at a Hooters restaurant in Myrtle Beach. Tell Millard he takes his wedding band off more than Tiger Woods does at a Hooters restaurant in Myrtle Beach.
That's a pretty good line.
Okay, we bring it all here.
We do. Now, did you hear the email?
No.
Okay, basically saying Daniel Carcillo needs an attitude adjustment. Grow up. Can you use your connections to pull him aside? That's from Ryan.
Look, it's funny. I talked to somebody the other day about Matt Cook, and I was hard on Matt Cook on the Savard hit, and I thought he deserved to be hard on. But you know what? As Tommy Fitz said, and then I talked to somebody the other day, said, hey, Doug, you'd love to have him on your team, the way he plays. Scored two goals the other night. Carcillo, you know what? He's an agitator. If you're not a Philly Flyer fan, you hate him. But you know what? I got to give Carcillo credit. I mean, you got to take the hatred aside if you're and look at him as a guy that is a pretty important player. I know fans are going to hate to hear this. He's a pretty important player on their team. As long as he doesn't take bad penalties. I think that's what drove Wayne Gretzky crazy in Phoenix, because he was trying to become that player, but he was taking too many bad penalties. I didn't like some of the things he did. I don't like some of the things he does, but that's his role.
Well, the Bejan shot, he takes it in the shoulder.
And then he dives. We hate the diving. And, like, you hit the nail on the head there. He's the last guy that should be taking dives. But you know what? You're trying to draw penalties, and if they're going to get sucked in by it, and it's really hard on the referees.
He did draw a penalty when Savard hit Boucher's glove, right. And then he mauled Savard.
He should, but that was a mistake, In my opinion, that was a big-time mistake by the referees that he doesn't get nailed there, especially after he dove just prior to that. But the referees, the dives, it's the referees hate it. And I hope someday that the league jumps on this and starts saying, hey, we're gonna do something about it. If you're going to take dives...
What would you do?
I'd suspend them. If they become...
You got to be a repeat offender of some
kind.
No, I mean that.
But yeah. And they know them. Like Colin Campbell, Mike Murphy, they know the half a dozen guys in the league that are just atrocious. The referees know them. I'd love to see them nail them with a couple game suspensions and fines.
What
I really would.
What disappoints me about Carcillo is...
And that's easier said than done because, you know what? To say it's a dive, we see it...
But that's the part that disappoints me on Carcillo is he's not a good diver. Last night was obvious.
It was sickening last night.
In the opening round against Motto, that was pathetic.
Yeah. So he's going to get nailed.
Like you could be... Those are two that you could certainly write him up or supplementary discipline.
Exactly.
Justin and Michael want to know what you think about the Savard biting accusation that Carcillo says that Savard chomped down on his finger.
Well, you know, when you talk to NHLers and you're getting your face washed and you got guys putting their... dirty gloves and in your stinking gloves in your mouth and trying to rip your mouth apart. Some guys deserve it. I don't like biting. I think it's out of line. Nobody likes it. But in that situation last night, I don't blame Savard.
Can he be an impact player? Wasn't
who?
Savard in this series?
Well, you know, the first game is emotion and, you know, spot duty, 15 minutes. Last night he wasn't very good, and I don't – that's not a knock because it's a tough grind. If they can win without him now, he will be an impact guy. Game 6-7, next round, he will get it. He'll have his game going, although this is a tough injury. I mean, tough injury. I'll tell you how bad concussions are. I asked Jill out for the first time I had a concussion. So they can really throw you off.
I'm going to tell her you said that.
I was out with a concussion and
I'm going to tell her you said that and you will pay for that.
Yeah. Anyway.
And you deserve to pay for that.
Yeah. Okay.
2-0 Boston over Philadelphia. Brof thinks that Philadelphia can come back and make this a series.
I think they can too. Rask versus Boucher. I've been wrong on Boucher the last round because I think he's played over his head. I give him credit for that. Rask, to me, is a good young goaltender, one of the good young goalies in the game with big upside, big potential. Great draft, 21st overall in the draft by John Ferguson. I don't think there's a match there. I think Rask is that much better. And last night
he's been great.
Last night there was three bad goals, in my opinion. I'd like a goalie expert to analyze them. I thought there were three bad goals.
Cheech did that.
I said a goalie expert.
Ross emails in, what's with the 70 shades? Was John Garrett up crying all night about his beloved Canucks?
Anyway, that's just a joke about John Garrett. John Garrett analyzed it, and when John Garrett says there are three bad goals, and to me he's fair on goaltending, but critical. John was, and I thought it was good to hear that from John Garrett because obviously he's a knowledgeable goalie guy.
Well, you're doing a big moonwalk, aren't you?
But the glasses and the mustache are bad. He's got to fix those.
RJ says Cheech looks like a Burt Reynolds lookalike with those shades on when he was in here in the first time.
RJ Broadhead shouldn't be.
It wasn't RJ Broadhead.
Emailing into our show. Oh, it wasn't RJ? Okay.
No. There's more than one.
Joke. Yeah. I'm joking.
Believe it or not.
You thought I was serious. See,
I don't know. That's a problem with our relationship.
That's a problem with our relationship.
Oh, no. No, there's a few.
There's a few more.
Let's not just leave it at one problem with our with our relationship and then our friendship. When we continue, Murray Wilson talking about the Montreal Canadiens. Andrei Markov out with a torn ACL. What happens in Game 3 and the rest of the series against the Pittsburgh Penguins? Should they be more confident going into Game 3 against the Pens than they were against Washington? And Darren McCarty on the subject of the Detroit Red Wings down 2 against the San Jose Sharks. Red Wings and Sharks playing Game 3 tonight at the Joe. It's Hockey Central at noon. The Fan 590 and Rogers Sportsnet.
Hockey Central on Toronto Sports Radio. The Fan 590, Rogers Sportsnet, and Sirius Channel 97.
great sign in Boston. Hockey Central at noon with Darren Millard and Doug McLean. Bruins hockey rules. And the underneath it says, never, ever date a Flyers fan, even if she shaves her mustache. And our producer, Greg Buckley at Hockey Central said, he's never broken that rule. Buckley's never broken that rule. Never dated a Flyers fan. They do, Flyers, well, Bruins are just trying to match the Flyers for
He has dated people with mustaches, though, I think.
but never a Flyers
never
fan.
Never a Flyers
with
fan.
Or without a mustache.
I actually dated a girl in college who had a mustache, sort of a mustache, and I used to think, how do I tell her to, like, lighten it up or shit, you know, but anyway.
What do you, so it wasn't she, you wanted her to blonde it out?
Yeah.
It you didn't just say shave the
really
thing?
It wasn't really a long dating scenario, but anyway, she did. And the guys used to say, Doug, she's got a mustache. And I said, well, anyway.
I want to know the rest of that, but not right now, okay? Here's Murray Wilson, the Montreal Canadiens color voice. Game 3 tonight. What's the city like right now, bud?
Well, the city is on fire. You know, they're welcoming back their heroes. Team has not been back in town since Game 7, beating the Capitals. They went right to Pittsburgh and, you know, played a couple of games there, got sweep. So, you know, everybody's at cloud 9 right now.
So let's clarify something first, because the guy that was just in here a little while ago said that he was describing you as a player, and he said you were a poor man's Frank Mahovlich. What would your comment be on that?
Probably pretty accurate, because I made $12,500 my first year. I think Frank left and went to Toronto Royals was making a million. Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
You skated a lot like him, though, didn't you?
Well, and I sat beside him. I had I was the luckiest kid in the world. I was a Canadiens fan growing up, and I sat between Henri Richard and Frank Mahovlich my first year in 73 in the dressing room. So the only thing I knew there, Doug, was that Red Fisher wasn't coming to talk to me in that corner.
Now, I was playing for the junior Canadiens that year, and we used to work out in the dressing room across from you guys, and there was a guy from Winnipeg, a defenseman, a red-haired defenseman who was hurt all the time and worked out in there all day long.
Dale Hogenson?
That's exactly who it was.
Yeah, exactly. He's from BC, I believe. Yeah.
All BC, okay. Anyway, so I just wanted to clarify that because it sort of hit home. So San Jose, Montreal in the final will be exciting for you.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Doug can handle that, though. he used to always tease people. He had enough Stanley Cups in the family, but I think since he became GM, I think that attitude has maybe changed a little bit.
He'd like one more. So, you know, let's take a look. I mean, the story of the Habs for me, obviously, Halat's one thing. But what about the way Subban has come in? And, you know, I was questioning it because they're putting him in against Washington, that high-powered offense. But, boy, the kid really has come in at a critical time. Jacques, would appear, has handled him well, or whoever is dealing with the blue line. But the kid has been pretty solid. And talk about needing him to be solid.
But he's been this way all year, you know.
Yeah.
He's had an exceptional year. He is the reason Canadians made the playoffs. There's no doubt about that. You know, the amount of injuries they had and the strongest position they had all year was goaltending with Price and him. And, you know, you take a look at Camilleri struggling when he first came back, and now he's on fire. You know, Gionta, he's back on fire right now. The power play they lived on for the first 3-4 months of the season is back working. The last month of the season, it didn't because they had Andre Kostitsyn and Camilleri coming back from injury and had to fit them into that power play. So it struggled. But, you know, you take a look what Camilleri has done. Gionta, Gomez has stepped it up. Gill has stepped it up. Now, you'd have to say just about everybody on this hockey team is playing at the top of their ability right now.
With Murray Wilson, Montreal Canadiens color analyst, as he heads to Montreal along with the rest of this series, as Pittsburgh and Montreal are tied up 1 going into Game 3. I don't know whether it's accurate, but should Montreal feel more confident going into Game 3 of this series than they were Game 3 of the Washington set?
Probably not. I would think, you know, they won Game 1 against Washington. They blew Game 2, really. They had a 4-1 lead with about 3 minutes to go in the second period and just made some brutal decisions and gave the momentum to the Capitals for the end of the period, and then Capitals stormed all over them. So, you know, I would think right now they've grown in stature, they've grown in confidence. Game 1, they played 5-on-5 very well against the Penguins. Obviously, their PK wasn't very good, and the reason was Pittsburgh had 5 days to prepare for them, and they made all the right adjustments and had the players buy into those adjustments. So Canes made their adjustments accordingly. And the way they're playing right now, they don't really worry about shots very much because a lot of shots come from outside. And the more people get frustrated, as Ovechkin did, as Semin did, as Green did, they just got across the blue line and fired the puck. And we started seeing that from Malkin the other night and from Crosby. You know, they haven't had a lot of success in games one or two at this point.
I just mentioned earlier, Subban, give me your thoughts.
A couple of thoughts. Here's a kid who's coachable, number one. He was up earlier in the year, we had back-to-back games against the Flyers, and he was like a water bug out there. He was all over the ice. To him, it was pond hockey. And they tried to play with Hal Gill, and Hal Gill had more time, had a tough time trying to figure out where the kid was all the time. Because it was amazing to watch. And Kirk Muller had a talk with him before his first playoff game. And, you know, I had a little chat with him and just passed a message along that Paul Blake had given Larry Robinson and I years ago. And, you know, to just compete and make your game simple, get the puck in deep, nobody beats you on the boards. And the kid has pretty well played that way. He's only jumped into the rush twice, and both times he got caught. And he was shaking his head on the way back when he got to the bench. And, you know, it's a whole lot different this time of year playing National Hockey League playoffs, and especially the teams that he's played against and playing in the American Hockey League. And he's learned, but he has incredible hands, incredible vision, and great feet.
And 23 minutes in game two.
Well, you know, I think it was 10 the first. I think it was about that the second, and then he stepped right up. And, you know, he had to, but he's capable of that. He's played those type of minutes in the American Hockey League, and it's how he plays. He has great balance. A one-on-one battle with Crosby. And Sidney's down low, probably one of the toughest guys in the league to handle. And PK battled him tooth and nail. It was early in the game. But the quickest thing for him is his outlet pass, and he's tape to tape. He can go cross ice quite easily, and he sees the play. There's no hesitation. There's no thought process. I see it. I make it happen.
Gomez, you say, stepped it up. I mean, you go back to that power play goal, you know, that he assisted on through the box against Washington. I mean, those are passes. That's what he's capable of doing when he's on top of his game. But that was a magnificent pass through the box on that huge goal.
Well, I think a bunch of things have happened with this hockey drug, and Gomez is one of the stories. As you know, when you put this many individuals together, it takes a while for them to sort themselves out in the leadership roles and the roles on the hockey team. And I think with the number of injuries, it was very difficult for this team to do that. And Scotty Gomez, who takes a five-minute major fighting Tom Pote and then takes a 10-minute misconduct in the next game, is not the Scott Gomez Kane needed. Now, since that time, he has really seemed to take a real active role and probably was embarrassed by doing those silly things and taking himself out of the lineup. But going back to the bench now, he's involved with the guys. He's spending a lot of time talking with Pouliot, talking with the guys coming off the ice. And, you know, his game's just gotten better and better. And that's his role with this hockey team.
It's a great coaching situation when you have a team that's going against the firepower of Washington and then you're going against the firepower of a Pittsburgh, because you know if you don't pay amazing attention to detail defensively, you have no chance. I think it's an easy coaching situation, and I give great credit to Jock and his group because they've got the message through, but they have paid great attention to their back-checking. I mean, their back-checking against Washington was phenomenal. You talk about outside shots and blocking lanes, but really their back-checking has been terrific.
Well, the number of shots they blocked, I'm not sure whether it was six or seven, game six or seven, and Halleck stopped 41, and the team itself blocked 41, and they're willing to sacrifice. But, they don't mind shots. Back pressure is something they have to live on. They know they're not a big team. They're a team that lives on the power play. If they get a power play goal, they have you in trouble. They get a lead, they have you in trouble, because they're comfortable playing with the lead. And a lot of these high-powered teams, you know, they need lots of goals to score, and Canadians know that very seldom are they going to score more than three. And with the goaltending they've had and the defense, you know, we haven't mentioned one guy right now, Josh George. Josh George, I think, is the steal of the National Hockey League, and Brother Doug was kind enough to throw him in the Craig Rivet deal. So he's a kid who, when he got traded, was never drafted as a junior, either as a junior player or drafted as an amateur in the National Hockey League. And he was captain of a Memorial Cup team. And his leadership won, but his ability to compete, he doesn't lose any battles along the wall. He fights you tooth and nail. And I watched him against some big players, Knubel and Ovechkin, and he'd come out with the puck nine times out of ten.
With Murray Wilson, Montreal Canadiens color analyst on Hockey Central at noon, the Fan 590 and Rogers Sportsnet.
And the great thing about Josh George is he's been interviewed more than Sidney Crosby and Ovechkin combined.
Well, he sees a lot of their numbers, doesn't he? You know, he's been the guy with Hal Gill that has taken over with Spatchik in game one, and Spatchik has a form of vertigo, has a bad virus, it just can't shake it. Hoping to have him back in by now, but he said he was ready to play after game seven, but as soon as he skated for any length of time, it came back, so who knows when he's ready. It could be, or it could be gone in 3 days, 3 months. They just don't know about him, but the other guys, obviously the news on Markov today that he's got a torn ACL is devastating to them as well, but PK Subban can pick up those minutes.
I don't think they can win against Pittsburgh. Obviously, you think differently.
Well, did you think that against Washington, Doug?
No, I picked Washington right to the nth degree.
Yeah, no, I had I saw a couple of, to me anyways, what we liked as Montreal fans was we looked at all the teams ahead of the Canadiens in the playoffs. They matched up best against Washington. Yeah. When Washington plays in that weak division, they play firebrand hockey, which usually doesn't win in the playoffs, and Canadiens like playing against Ovechkin, and I think Markov and Ovechkin are good buddies, and they love playing against one another. But I think the big thing for Montreal is they had success, and they had success in the Verizon Center during the season, and one of the five teams to beat them in that building. And Jose Theodore, for some reason, has never really played tremendously well against the Canadiens since he was traded, whether it be in Colorado or Washington.
They must tell him that the Canadiens play against him a lot. Dale Hogenson, by the way, guys, from North Battleford. That's from John Garrett.
Oh, Saskatchewan. Great. Okay.
Great. Yeah. Okay.
Not sure. Jeez, which
he had the big pipes.
We're not sure which side of North Battleford.
I used to wear the long T-shirt when I was working out next to him. He had the big pipes.
He had the big legs too. But I remember Hoagie loved. He used to race those big Hydrodyne planes. Kelowna. That's why I thought he was out west.
Oh, that's great. Great stuff. Thanks, Murray, and good luck to the Habs.
Well, we'll just, as we say, Dougie, we'll just take one period at a time.
Exactly.
Thanks, bud. There's Murray Wilson. One round maybe farther than he thought he would go because Murray's retiring or taking a sabbatical from his job. So
and
a
great
little run to end it.
Great knowledge. And you know what? He was a great skater, Murray Wilson, but great knowledge of the Habs.
Isaac emails in, who's taking over the second hour from Doug tomorrow? Because McLean's obviously seen his last sunrise after the concussion comment. Talking about dating your wife while you had a concussion.
Actually, the Blue Jays are taking over tomorrow. I don't work. I'm off.
And a great email regarding diving and why everybody's upset about it. That's from Daryl. We'll get it to Doug McLean and Darren McCarty as we continue to talk about the San Jose Sharks, Detroit Red Wings, and Hockey Central at noon, the Fan 590, and Rogers Sportsnet.
Share your passion for sports. Everything you talk about is on Toronto Sports Radio, the Fan 590 and fan590.com. Hockey Central on Toronto Sports Radio, the Fan 590, Rogers Sportsnet, and Sirius Channel 97.
Hockey Central at noon, Millard and McLean should acknowledge my row return home from Kandahar.
How great a
overnight.
News. How great a news is that?
Especially given the disappointing report out of Kandahar that Petty Officer Craig Blake lost life to an IED last night. Ram ceremony tomorrow in Kandahar. Email coming into the Hockey Central inbox as we bring in Darren McCarty covering the talk about the Detroit Red Wings and the San Jose Sharks series. And Darren, this relates to all the diving that we've seen. Setoguchi, obviously, in the San Jose series. Carcillo for the Philadelphia Flyers. And Daryl says, how is diving any different than a hook, slash, or a high stick? They're all infraction. They're all done in an effort to help your team win. What do you think of that, Darren? And then we'll get Doug McLean to chime in on the back end of that.
I think it's a great point. I think that it is becoming more of a part of the game. I would put diving in... You know, sometimes the goalie interference in front of the crease, too, in the same category. But I think it wasn't until recently. Usually if somebody gets called for a dive, they call the other guy so it evens up. But I think you see more now that the refs are starting to call just strictly a dive a few times in these playoffs, which should happen. So guys are going to try to get an advantage any way they can. But if they get caught, then they should be penalized. I agree.
But and it's not part of the game, because when you're hooked or you're slashed or you're cross-checked, the referee makes the call based on the infraction. When a guy dives, it puts the referee in a tough situation because, number one, as a referee, you don't really expect it. Darren, when you hit a guy, you didn't expect him to take a dive, did you?
No, not at all. And I think that to add to your point, that's why they call diving unsportsmanlike conduct.
Right.
It's not. If I don't believe it's a part of the game either, and it's one of those more discretionable calls that it does put referees in a tough position. I agree.
But it's an awful feeling, I suspect, and I remember just being on the bench and watching it happen. But it's an awful feeling when you barely touch a guy and he makes a scene, especially a guy that's a supposed tough guy like a Carcillo. You don't see many tough guys acting that way, do you, Darren?
Yeah, but they're more, he's a tough guy, but he's like the agitator. You know?
Right.
He's the guys that are at the top of the list. You know, you think of him and a guy like a Sean Avery, Jarkko Ruutu, Matt Cook, you know, these guys, it's sort of an element that they have to their game, but everybody knows. Everybody knows that, so the referees, they are on top of things like that. So as far as whether it's not so much those guys diving, because they will get the diving and sportsmanlike call before a lot of other guys. You bring up like a Setoguchi and things like that, who aren't known for doing those things. They're going to, if they start doing that, it definitely puts a tough decision on the referee, because you don't have that in your mind that, okay, this guy's a pretty good, honest player, good player, good skills, he's not going to dive, and you get away with it, I guess.
Detroit against San Jose, Game 3 tonight, chatting with Stanley Cup champion Darren McCarty about what's happening with the Red Wings down 2-0 for the first time since 2003 when they were swept by the Anaheim Mighty Ducks. What do you think the mindset is of the Red Wings after 2 1-goal losses in San Jose?
Number one, stay out of the penalty box. And number two, try to play a 16-minute game. Because what's happened to them throughout these playoffs at different times is they're playing well for 55 minutes, but they have a 5-minute lapse, and saw it in game one against San Jose where they get 3 goals in like 2 minutes, and in the third period of that game they took a couple penalties and put themselves down a couple men, and on the unfortunate stick break and for Nick Lidstrom, but they just have to play hard and play consistent for the time. They have to stay out of the box, because what I thought last game, with all the penalties and the penalty time they have to kill, it just wore them down, and wore down especially a lot of their top guys that kill penalties in playing off situations. Datsyuk, Zetterberg, Lidstrom, Rafalski, guys like this. And they're a little too late for them last game.
Darren, like, you know, I said it before the playoffs, and I mean, this is with all due respect to the Red Wings, but are they good enough to come back? I mean, when you look at, you know, from their top teams, McCarty, Maltby, Draper, Hudler, Samuelsson, Hossa. I mean, they're not. I mean, Darren, after their top three guys, and I say Datsyuk, Zetterberg, Franzen, and you love Cleary, and you love some of these guys, but they're not nearly as deep as they were at one time.
Well, I think that's. I think you're right. I think we were a lot deeper when we were winning Stanley Cups. Had a lot more firepower on the average. So, yeah, I think that's what really scares a lot of Red Wings fans, is that they see this team as a really good hockey team, but they can afford to make less mistakes, I guess, than what we used to. We used to be able to correct some mistakes or blunders that we'd have because they had so much talent. So that's why That's why I said it's so imperative for them to play a 60-minute hockey game. They don't have the luxury not to.
With all due respect to them, Darren, the salary cap changes that, and Kenny's had to really make some tough adjustments. So that's with all due respect, I say that.
Oh yeah, no, of course. We all have. They're still a great hockey team, and they can still win this series. That's how every team in the league with the salary cap and has to revamp a little bit. And I think that you see top to bottom, you don't have the. Just four lines. I remember in 2002, our fourth line was Igor Larionov, Luke Robitaille, and Thomas Holmstrom. So that's pretty good depth offensively anyway. So I think the game's changed that way. I think, like you said, you had to set your team up differently because of the cap. And That's just the way the game is these days.
I was looking forward to the series, so I really hope that Detroit can get back into it to make a set of it. San Jose, Detroit, Babcock, McClellan, right on down the list, Joe Thornton, Datsyuk. So thanks for bringing us a little bit of your insight, especially on that diving question. That was neat.
Thanks, Darren.
No problem. Hey, nice to talk to you guys.
Good to talk to you, bud.
Darren McCarty, former Detroit Red Wings Stanley Cup champion. Text coming in. Hey, sexy Darren, does Doug think that Vancouver will win their series? And how many games? That's Crystal from Toronto.
I pick Chicago to win the series.
Mac, where were you on Saturday? Looked for you, but you weren't there. I was at Opus. Mike in Oshawa.
I was in Florida. Sorry, Mike.
And Doug, I'm heading down to Florida, leaving Friday morning. My girlfriend's family booked the flight, and we are somehow flying down on a 2-stop, 8.5-hour flight just to get to Orlando. Please tell me you've never had to deal with travel plans as poorly as these, and can I visit you when I'm down there this weekend? Shane in St. Catharines.
I'm not going to be there, so no, you can't visit me. But no, what's that called? That's called cheapskate flying, and you do the 2-stopovers so you get reduced rates. I allow 1-stopover. I usually go Toronto, Charlotte to Florida if I'm trying to save money.
Jason says, if Boucher has a questionable game 3, Philadelphia falls behind 3-0, would you start Michael Layton if he's ready? Archie.
Yes.
Hey guys, Dale Hoganson's from my hometown of North Battleford.
Hey,
played
great
for the Battleford Bruins hockey system. My grandfather was a trainer for that team, and he remembers driving all those kids around to road games.
That's a great story.
He comes in my bar and tells me great hockey stories. He's a great guy.
Well, he was. I remember working out with him, and I used to have my arms were quite a bit smaller.
I don't care about that. I really don't care about that. Mike from North Battleford, what's the bar? If he comes into your bar, give us the name of the bar.
We've mentioned Opus and Mistura. We try to get the good spot. Lunita, Molino's a good new spot.
We'll mention your bar.
Sam's our friend over there. Yeah,
all the time. And by the way, Dolphin Kings beat your team last night.
The Brockville Braves. But that's the preliminaries. And they should have. They're at home.